Well, the only reason I'm here is to introduce Steve Brown, who's the chief guy, you know, Dr. Evil. We kind of want to get across how really easy it is to finally, you know, wind up building something on the tubes that, isn't a kit. And does everybody build a kit amp? I know my first experience with building a kit amp was a bottlehead 4-foot, probably. Most of you guys, the same thing, or something like a Decware or whatever. And I don't know if you're like me, if you're as dumb as I am, you know, it's put tab A in slot B, and when you get done, maybe it plays, and maybe it doesn't, you gotta do some troubleshooting. But you don't know what you did. You don't know what any of that stuff is for. Now, Steve, on the other hand, was fixing the neighbor's color TVs when he was a teenager, and has probably built every kind of circuit that there is and modified them to come up with his own ideas. And we wound up building a simple 45 amp together, which is what this is a schematic for. And I found it appealed to him because it had a constant current source as a for the driver, and it's a parafeed type of driver. We decided to build it together, or I conned him into us building it together, each one building, because I couldn't have done it on my own. But you learn as you go along, and as I built a few more kits, you know, previous to this, we did kind of figure out that this terminal is, that no, sound about that's the B plus, I know the B plus is, that's the, you know, the high voltage current source, and things like that. So you wind up learning. And then when you actually build something from scratch, then you're really doing something. And the tough thing for me, and I think probably for most guys who, you know, didn't grow up learning to read schematics or didn't take electrical engineering or whatever, is figuring out how to get from here to actually wire. And my take on it, and we're going to get to where, you know, Steve's going to go through, and we're going to draw lines and try and turn this schematic in an elementary way into a wiring diagram. My take on it is that if you actually stick parts on a board and run wires between them, eventually you're going to figure out, you know, instead of thinking, gee, is this series, is this parallel, eventually you're going to figure out that it really isn't all that complicated. It's a fairly simple amplifier without that many parts. And, yeah, hey, this is, you know, the schematic is not some foreign language. It's actually a recipe that you can follow. So,
And one of the things we'll talk about is, in this case, the recipe's got some room for a little seasoning to be added. As it stands, it's a nice little thing, and there's a couple parts that maybe are a little underspecced and stuff like that, so I'm going to go through that, where we can have the changes that we did make. So how many of you have actually built a scratch-built project with this work? Put that caveat. So a few of you. Okay, so this is not for all of you. One of the first things, of course, since we're talking about circuits with that are energized with 500 volts or so, is that there's a safety concern. And just kind of go over some of those safety considerations. 500 volts can kill you, but so can hang lighting, right? So, 6 and 1/2 dozen or whatever. There are a number of things to keep in mind. One that I always like to do is clean the bench up before I energize the circuit for the first time, because there's always something laying around. And I forgot, I was building kits when I was a kid, and I forgot whether it was Dynaco or Heathkit, but one of them suggested, before you plug it in, turn it upside down and shake out any loose pieces of solder and stuff like that. It's amazing how those little chunks get right underneath the cap, you know, and there you go. So I like to make sure the bench is cleaned off. Use a Variac. I'd say that's one of the really key pieces of equipment, and you can find them on eBay for pretty cheap, $50-$60, something like that. So I put it off for a long time buying one, and I'm really glad that I did, because before, the method of testing is stick it in the wall, and if it doesn't go off, then it must be good. So Variacs are very helpful. We all have heard probably the rule about when you're getting in there making voltage measurements, try to keep one hand in your pocket, and so you don't create a ground loop through your heart. And so if there's going to be a ground connection that goes arm through leg rather than across your heart, that's good to remember. These are appropriate tools. We were talking about this last night at drinks. One of the things that I really like on bolt gaiters, for example, are the little plastic grabber clips. You guys seen those? They're actually designed to clip on the leads for integrated circuits and things like that. So they clip little small things, and then once they're on there, they hold tight, and it's not like one of those big long probes where you're going to slip off and you know, you look up to see the meter and the probe goes, next thing you know, you've caused a problem. Discharge caps before you stick your fingers in there. Caps are nasty things. They hold a charge can be a long time. Most properly designed circuits, and this has it have bleeder resistors on the caps. So if you unplug it, the charge bleeds off pretty quickly in and of itself. But if you're in the middle of building it, maybe you don't have the bleeder in yet, you want to test to see if something's working fine, so you can run into the problem. Be sure that you bleed the caps. So how do you do that? A simple resistor across the cap is the easiest way to do it. I realize that everybody here probably comes from quite different backgrounds in terms of your experience with this, so I'm going to kind of go quick, and if you've got any questions, just stop. Right? Let's try to left a little cap we've got. Two or three connections. Could be two, could be three, could be four, but it's a multi-part cap. So, all you're going to do is take a resistor, stick it like that, use little clip leads. Okay. What size resistor? 50K, 100K, somewhere in that range. Put a voltmeter on it and watch the meter until it gets to zero. Now, some caps, especially oil ones, can bounce back after you've done that. So if you take the leads off, the charge can bounce back on them a little bit, so be careful. If you decide to, you want to be extra safe, at the end of the day, you can clip lead across it. Ground the plus to the minus. Be sure you take that off before you charge it up again. This is the voice of experience speaking to you. Make sure the components that you're using are properly rated. One of the problems we ended up with the amp is that the B plus on this runs really close to 500 volts. So the diodes that are specified for the power supply, I think, are 1000 PIV, 1000 peak inverse volts. So 500 volts steady state coming through there, 1,000 volts peak inverse rating is not high enough, and Bill fried two or three times, right? Before it finally gave up and fried out.
Diodes fried out some very lovely, expensive measuring
tubes. So sure your parts are properly rated. On things like diodes, you can get a 1,200 volt part if you want to put it in there if you're really sold on solid state rectifiers, or you can put two diodes in series, which is pretty easy.
Maybe we should pause just for a second because there are just a few scratch builders here. The diodes in the beginning, pretty much in the beginning of the power supply, you can change the power from alternating current to direct current. A diode is called a diode because it's just got two tier terminals on it. It's got in and out. And the power can't come back the other way, the way it would with alternating current. And it's direct current that you want to, what you want the D plus, the high voltage current to be. That's something you can do research on your own as to why and how, but that's what those diodes do. It's also why they get slammed.
So if you want to double them up, this will handle twice the voltage. So instead of 1,000 volts, 1,000 volts, you get 2,000. But you got to do that in parallel with resistors, and that balances the voltage across both of them. And you put a couple of caps across as well, value of 0.01 just like that. It'll help with some of the hash and the noise. And they usually make these like a 1 kilovolt, a fairly high rated cap. I've used ceramics, yeah. Yeah, those little like, epoxy coated high voltage ones you get, the mouser and stuff. Okay. So, anyway, that's sort of the end of the safety lecture. But what other things can you guys, have you learned in your lives or would like to share that?
Yeah. Check your output that you're testing on. Nailed myself once. Really big time check on the transformer voltage. Hot in the switch to the wall. So at this point, I'm switching both lanes.
Okay. Everybody understand what he's talking about? Where you have both sides of it instead of just one, so you need a double hole, double truss switch.
Double hole, double truss. Not a good idea to have ever switched the vehicle, is it? I'm trying to get a little service. You see that your vehicle, because it's too hot, but it's too cold.
Well, the ground is bonded. The ground connects to the neutral back of the breaker box.
Are you I used to carry around a little digital ball gainer that got rid of the bolts. Grounded against the chassis, and the other one checks the voltage and something that's only going up to 350. But the rug that I was using over here, something happened where I slipped. And so I got 350 volts through my chest. And your heart just squeezes so tight, so hard, so fast, that we can hear the blood squirting the capillaries in the ears. And so I want to use a lever.
Again, that's why I like the little grabber clips. I stick them on there and my hands are free.
Yeah.
Even the little alligator clips are too big. Yeah.
It works.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got it years ago. I've just heard about it recently. In terms of tools, if you're going to scratch build, you're going to need, obviously, a variety of chassis building kinds of tools. We can talk about that in a minute. But real quickly on equipment, since you brought it up, one of the things that I like are digital multimeters rather than the old-style VOMs or something like that, because the VOMs reverse the leads accidentally, the needle goes slam in the wrong direction, but a digital multimeter auto-corrects just about everything, so they're much more foolproof. And they're not very expensive. I bought one at Radio Shack probably 20 years ago. The plastic case is all broken now for having dropped it on the floor 16 times and stuff, but still works great. People ask, what other, you see these questions on the forums a lot of times, what kind of other equipment do I need? I need an audio generator. Besides a voltmeter, an audio generator is a really handy piece of equipment, and you can get them at Antique Electronics Supply. I think we got an extra one for $80, something like that, $90. Not very expensive. And the reason for that is that that alone will really help you trace out problems in a circuit. Another question comes up a lot about scopes. Do I need a scope or do I not need a scope? I find it very helpful to have a scope, but I don't think it's something that you absolutely have to have. For audio use, you can buy an older used scope. We don't need something that you can work on, high-speed computer circuits with here. So, something that goes up to, up megahertz or so, it's going to be fine. And you can probably pick that up for $100 or $200 on eBay pretty easily. Yeah?
Actually, on the internet, there's some digitizing associates with software for your PC.
So what is like an interface box you connect to the PC and then the PC screen becomes your
right. And with a little more money you can buy a 50
hour
system, so
you can get
cool. Maybe you could post a link to that on the audio right thing.
That'd
be cool.
Yeah, there's several available, so unless
you can
that'd be
great. Let's go ahead and get into the circuit itself. One of the reasons why, one of the first things I'd say is, before you build something, understand what you're going to use it for. Because if you build this amp, this puts out maybe 2 watts. So if you got 85 dB speakers, you shouldn't be building this amp, build something else. So make sure that you're building something that you're not wasting your time on down the road. Also, how many of you, this is a single-ended design, how many of you heard or know anything about single-ended versus push-pull? Probably everybody here? Okay. How many of you have had the opportunity to actually listen to single-ended? Okay. When this started becoming a hot thing, early 80s or so, when I built my first single-ended amp, My question was, why don't I just build one and see what it sounds like? You got to build two. So if you're going to dive in, be prepared to actually dive in. Don't go halfway. And I think that's why a lot of people start with like something, some old venerable AFOS 270 or something like that. You know, it's easier to get your feet wet. But let's say we're going to build this circuit. And this is fairly typical of a single driver, single-ended triode amplifier. Parts and values would change if you're going to use a 300B or something like that. But this has got some really cool features in it. So if you can get away with 2 watts, we'll talk a little bit about some of the things that make this circuit kind of interesting. First of all is the power feed output. And now, here's the caveat. I'm a builder, and I can build from schematics really well. But I can't explain to you all the physics and intricate details of how and why and waveforms and that kind of stuff coming out of these. So if you know the technical answers, don't quiz me, but share the answer with the rest of the folks here. The advantage of the parafeed is that you can have higher inductance on the output transformer. What that does is it gives you more goodness of the output. How's that for the technical? That ends the technical part of our lecture. And the reason that happens is because in a traditional transformer in a single-ended design, you have an air gap in there so that the core doesn't saturate magnetically. So it doesn't become a big magnet. You put an air gap in there to break that. So what we do here is you don't have to have the air gap because the coil up here, L2, takes the load off of the output transformer, and we actually block the DC on the output transformer with C6. It's just hard to look at you and then focus on this load. So that's kind of an interesting design. And what we have found, which I'm in here, is that we get really nice bass.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And I'll have an article coming out to GoGo probably mid-month for the first time, which talks about my conversations with Michael Steve at the Magnum Plus. And one of the points he made to me in the article is that
it's kind of hard here.
Okay. The transformer that we used, the Robinhood transformers, which you'll read about in my article if you go to GoGo, it's a rather small, fairly expensive, but rather small transformer. A, it doesn't have the air gap, but it's spec'd down to being flat down to 30 hertz. Now, he also makes transformers, and you may have seen them, the DSO25 and so forth, big, gigundous things for 4 times the money. And they're spec'd to go to 20 hertz. And he says that 10 hertz, by giving that up, the transformer doesn't have to be even half as big. Fewer windings, less money. Still sounds great. Now the parafeed all by itself increases the bass. Part of the reason is that you can establish a better relationship between the transformer and the so-called parafeed and the coil that you're using. And as Steve mentioned, the coil becomes so important it takes the load off the transformer. So for various reasons, and there's a little more in my article, and there's a lot more on the internet, Steve Bench, who I hired some of the stuff from. If you go and read his stuff, it's great on there, and you'll find more information. So, yes?
Does this design prohibit the use of transformers damping air gaps?
Yeah, if you're either going to build a parafeed or you're not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you could use an air gap transformer. You just wouldn't use the coil and the parafeed transformer.
Right.
You should use one air gap transformer instead.
Yeah.
And I can draw that.
It's still similar.
Appropriate to ask you about, in
the case of C6, that would look
to be
a very critical
capacitor.
Oh, yeah.
The
highest
quality.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the size of that?
The
places where you want to go with the absolute highest quality.
Right. Yeah. And we used the obligato. Yeah, I have seen them, didn't really know how good they'd be. I had heard from a couple of different sources that this amp, because this amp has been built, was run at VSAC a few years ago. Supposedly John Tucker uses it to run his horns, exemplar horns. But it tends towards some dryness, and a 45-2 all by itself can tend towards some dryness. And so I thought an oil cap would be a good idea, and I recalled seeing on DIY Hyphen Bicycle on a site these new obligato oil caps, which are very inexpensive, My goodness. Well, they did the job, didn't they?
Yeah, they did a very nice job.
Not a dry sounding amp. How much of that is owed to that cap? But you're absolutely right. You know, if you're going to spend $400 on a cap, these obligados are like $12 or $19 or something. But if you're going to go nuts, that's the place to go nuts. Yeah,
that's why DIYers look for $400.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're physically not tremendous either. So that's the nice thing is they don't take up a ton of chassis space. So yeah, the other thing about that C6 is that you can experiment a little bit with the value of that. I forget what spec they're doing. It's 10 microfarads.
We use 10.
You can go up and down a little bit, and it actually creates a resonant circuit with the transformer primary. So what that can do is gives you a little bit of a bass boost. So, and you wrote about that in the DeGogo article. You have full supply voltage there, so you need something that is rated for 500 volts.
Yeah, it happens to be 630 volts. And they're at 10 microfarads, they're fairly common and not terribly expensive. They're 630 volts.
The other nice thing about this design is that it's direct couple. Now, this is a good thing sonically, but it makes it a little bit more challenging as a DIY project. Right? So a direct couple means is that there's no DC blocking capacitor between the driver stage and the output stage. Okay? And why that makes it a little trickier is that, from a DIY perspective, you couldn't, for example, pull out the driver tube and turn this on and have it last for very long. So everything's got to be in place, and it's all got to work simultaneously. So whereas with a more traditional design that might be cap coupled between stages, you could power it up, you could test your driver state, works okay, test the output state, works okay, plug it all together, good to go. This, it has to work all together at the same time. Does it make sense?
I also want to turn the volume down, turning it on and off.
The other interesting thing is that it's got a CC, it has a constant current supply on the driver stage. Now what they've done here is they've basically shown you the parts for a, what is that called, the bottleneck mix? Is it anticipation? Okay, their anticipation stage. Now, there are simpler ways to do this, and there are more complicated ways to do this. The stage that we use, the CCS we use, is based off of Gary Kim's Rev 506 design, whatever it was. But what that gave us was a lot more goodness. So what the CCS does is it simulates a very high AC impedance, which the tube likes, because when the tube's got a really high AC impedance on the plate, it can run just crazy. It can run crazy legs and does just wonderful things. So to do that with a resistor, you need a very large resistor, but then you need a very high power supply, so it goes back and forth. Right? So CCS solves some of those problems in a very elegant way. Yes? Yes, you could put a chip in there. Yes. Or a simple one MOSFET design would work in there too. So if you want to use a choke on the driver, it would look like this. And MagnaQuest, that's our next three. MagnaQuest makes some 100 Henry, 10 milliamp, for like $90 a pair. Okay. And I forget the part number.
Now
the specs. But yeah, that'll give you about what you need, because the current through our first stage is set at 10 milliamps. And the MagnaQuest stuff has a little bit of headroom in there, so running it right at 10 milliamps is going to be fine. So that's one of the things that's not shown on here. So if you're building this and you want to troubleshoot it, the plate voltage here should be 150 at 10 milliamps. It always bugs me that schematics leave off important things like and you have to kind of guess and go backwards and figure it out.
You want to run some wires?
Sure.
Let's run some wires.
Okay. Any quick questions about the basic circuit?
You said it's DC coupled. So do you happen to be putting out some offset out of your DIY creating?
That'll affect it. That won't be good.
Gotta watch out for those DC offsets.
I just make sure the preamp's got a cap on the output, because I hate having another cap in the circuit, personally. But either way, Make sure there's one on the output of the preamp or one on the input of the power amp.
Transformer.
Or a transformer input.
Yeah.
Now we're getting way too fancy, guys.
We're
moving away from the...
There's some ringers in the crowd.
And you know, I've used some of their, like, the amorphous core 96-something.
Okay.
Been all that happy with them. The other thing I'll point out real quickly, and we'll start drawing some lines, is that on the input tube, you'll see that the both halves of this are paralleled. What that allows us to do is cut the plate resistance effectively in half, and that allows us to drive the 45 a little bit more robustly than if it was not done that way. So that's the reason for that being paralleled. And, you know, you see stuff all over the place. Parallel tubes are bad, you know, non-parallel is better. I think it sounds pretty darn good. I mean, we've stacked it up against everything that Bill's been reviewing and, you know, stable full of amps that I've got. It consistently wins hands down.
Yeah.
Okay, draw some lines. I didn't know I was going to have to do that.
I introduced you. That's how I did my job. And I'm going to take your picture when I'm done.
Good guy. You're buying lunch, did I tell you that? Well, what Bill thought was that if you really haven't much experience DIYing, it might be fun to go through this and kind of relate physical components to schematic components. So let me take a stab at that. And the way that this is shown on here is kind of the layout of the air amplifier. Is that right?
So actually, maybe I should pass this around.
Yeah.
And take a gander at it.
The way we lay out things is very much like a Dynacor SD70, so we went for a symmetrical design, so we put the power transformer here, and the outputs and green shells are like this, and then the drivers here, and the...
What do you measure here?
Is that right?
Yeah, that's cool.
Roughly?
Yeah.
And the rectifiers here is
in the middle of it. Yeah.
So, the theory here is that with an all symmetrical like that, there is hum. There's always going to be some hum. So the hum is symmetrically distributed left channel and right channel. If you laid it out like I did it, with kind of traditional transformer here, here, and here, then the theory is that this one's going to pick up more hum than this one is. And frankly, these amps, I don't think either of them hum.
Not very much, but I like my hum in stereo. So.
I can't detect any difference, personally. Okay, so we want this layout. So when you look at your the pictorial diagram, what you see is there's a ground bus in the middle that you're drawing. So we're basically looking at just the left-hand side of this. And what we did was we ran a ground bus down in the middle of the chassis this way. So all of our components from the input, high over here, and so forth. Okay. And then this is grounded to the chassis right up there. Make sense? The grounding scheme that you're going to use is very important. So this is probably the most critical thing in making a successful do-it-yourself project. If you don't get the grounding right, you're not going to be happy. On the input, let's talk about that for a minute. So we've got the input over here, and here's our drivers here. So the way we actually ran this was to take the input down here, and then and the ground comes down here too, so you got both sides of the hot ground coming down here. So the ground connects in through here to ground. So there's not two loops, right? Because otherwise you might be tempted off grounded here and I'm grounded here. Now you got a ground loop. No. Not here? Here. And all of our components, like the cathode bias resistor goes to the ground bus, CCS is down in here. It's got kind of ground connection, so it's irrelevant. This guy's got the cathode resistors connected into the ground bus, all that kind of stuff. So again, one flow, no multiple connections on your brackets. So any questions on grounding? Okay. All right, on this. Let's start over here with that one. L1 is the parafeed choke, not the output transformer. And the output transformer, well, you've got it right over here. Isn't that over here?
Well, I didn't actually, you know. I kind of made it fit
out.
What
is the overchoke? Oh, okay. Let's look at the, So we have a, you didn't draw it, but we have a rectifier.
We have a rectifier, right.
So your first hole is a rectifier. Remember, again, we're looking at a chassis that looks like this. Power transformer, rectifier, driver cube, 45. So on the rectifier, it's going to come in like this. So these are typically twisted, I should have done it. And here's the center tap. Now the center tap goes to our central ground connection. So that's the first thing we stick on there. It's the center tap for the high voltage secondary. The color codes on these are pretty universal. So this is red, red, red. Now to make your rectifier work, we need to have a heater. We take the second tap off of here to the heater lane. Remember correctly, 4, 6, 2, and 8. This is a 5, 4, or
5, 8, 4,
or 5, 8, 4.
But it's an octal, it's an 8,
10. Okay. So, now I'm coming off of the diode, the rectifier. So what we did is we replaced our D1 and D2 with a vacuum tube rectifier. That did a number of things for us. It gave us a slower startup. Yeah, it gave us not blowing diodes.
Diodes to blow off.
So,
what you guys probably understand is with the rectifier too, it doesn't reach full power until the filaments are warmed up, and it takes time for the filaments to warm up. So it's kind of a mechanical, as you know, as opposed to say an electric, or it's optoelectric delay things, you know.
Yeah.
On the power supply,
yeah, this is a 5-volt winding. And then we've got another one over here for 6.3. Now, the filament winding for the 45, where'd you put that one, Phil?
That's the big circle in the middle.
No, the filament winding. You put it in this transformer, but it's a separate transformer, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we did it both ways. We want to take another filament transformer.
No, you had to put in there with
buckles. Oh, we had it. Yeah, that's right. Because of the transformer.
Okay, so
we have a transformer we use, needed a solid transformer.
Canon makes a nifty little part. I wish I remember the part. It's a dual secondary, dual primary transformer with 2.5 volts and 2.5 amps. You can connect the secondaries together for 5 volts, or you could use them individually for 2.5 volts each. That's what we did. So one goes to one 45, and goes to the other 45. Works great. Nice. Small little unit, great piece of land. Okay, so if we're following along here, the next thing we're going to do is we're going to go to our first cap. Is it C1?
Okay.
What do we use there? Oh, we use the solenoid.
That's the 47 microfarad solenoid.
Okay. 47 microfarad solenoid.
Circuit calls for a bigger electric limit, but we didn't want to use electric limit, so
right.
But the 47 is fine.
So what's the other end of this capacitor connected to? One goes to B plus, the other end goes to ground.
I'm going to put this green for ground.
So other end of this goes. Now, what's the next thing that comes off of that is our coil. The other end of the coil now is in series with, this is the next cap is C2. For that, we print a, up here towards the top, we've got a JJ's.
Yeah.
We've got a JJ cap. It has three sections to it. So it looks like this schematically. So it has a common ground connection.
This is why Steve's doing this and not me.
Yeah, so I can look like what I'm talking about. Yes, that's the left of it. So you gotta make sure that your minus connection goes to the ground bus. We've got two plus connections here. This is, I should have used there for two plus. So this guy's gonna come down here and connect in here. And off of that, then we put our bleeder resistor, which is R9. Now this is one of the parts that I felt was kind of under-spec. What we went to was a 5-watt 270K part. I forget what this calls for, but it's like a 1-watt part, and it was just way under spec. So let's make this 270K 5 watts. I put that in right away, again for the safety reasons of if I turn this on for some reason, I want that cap let off as quickly as possible if I want to turn it back off again. There's a parallel cap here, C3. C3 is just a little, use like a 1 microfarad solar or something like that. It's just a little film cap to bypass the electrolytic. And then they've got another bleeder cap on the output. Put in, leave out, I don't care. One is fine, put in two is finer. Now we've got an unused section of this. What we did was, there's another little modification in your schematic. So we put resistor in here about, I think it was 4.7K 10 watts. And this goes to the CCS. Let's draw that as a board. And what that does is, if you look on here, the way your schematic is, the CCS connects directly to the main V plus, right? So we've got 480 volts going to the CCS, going to the tube. And we've got the same 480 volts going to the output tube. So that's what that is showing you there. What we did was we put a low resistor in here and an additional cap. Why? Because all we need this to swing is 60 volts or so, because this is biased at about 50. So what we really need to swing here is about 60 volts. So what that meant was, without this here, we're wasting a lot of heat in this guy and putting a lot of stress, I felt, unnecessarily on the CCS. What this does is it just drops us down 100 volts or 200 volts or whatever. So we made 4.7K. 10 milliamps, we drop this by 50 volts, 47 volts. So it just lowers the load that's on this guy and also gives us a little bit of added isolation for the first stage from the second stage. Okay. So another little modification you could buy as well. How we doing?
Excellent. We're going to go good for time.
Probably 5 watts or so would do it. You'd have to, it's easy to figure out. We just go,
the current is 10 milliamps. The voltage drop is 47 volts. So just multiply them together. 0.47 watts. Multiply it up by about 5 to get a safety factor in there. So 5 watts would be more than enough.
2 watts would buy it up. Well, yeah, you get warmer, but that's fine.
Okay, we're going to leave off.
Next part, let's look at the V1. Let's use green. Okay, we're going to the driver stage, V1.
If you guys don't mind, I'm going to go over here so that you don't lose sight of. So
use these fancy Teflon things from DIY. And I gotta tell you, these are the biggest pain in the neck. If any of you have seen the 9-pin version of these Teflon dudes, the pins are so close together. I was getting the magnifying glass out, my tiniest needle nose pliers to try and hook stuff around there and solder it.
And I managed to show up about an hour after you got done.
Yeah, I got it. I like the traditional 9-pin ceramic thing. Okay, so here's this. Oh, we didn't label the two pins.
Yeah,
there, huh? Oh, yeah, right there. That's, yeah. Oh, what a guy. Okay. So in this case, on the 5965, you know, pin 1 and 5 and 9 of the heaters, right?
Yeah.
1 and 5.
Right off the GDSL.
So in this case, we're going to connect these two together in our 6.3 millimeter that runs. Internally, what this looks like is we've got two heaters in the tube.
That's the term dual drives. By the way, you guys all familiar with the Duncan's? Is it Duncan's tube board? Yeah, great resource. Go there, and there's every tube here is imaginable.
So what we have here are two heaters with the centers of them connected internally, and that comes out to pin 9, and one of pin 5 on the other side. So what we're doing is we're running a wire between here and here, and that goes out, and then we have our second one coming here. So what we've done is we put those two heaters in parallel for 6.3 volts. We leave them in series and run it on 12.6 volts. Okay, so what I do, just my thoughts on how I approach these things is, I like to do all of the filament wiring and stuff first and get it out of the way, because that goes closest to the chassis. You want it to run close to the chassis so you have better hum suppression. And you want the wires twisted together. I even twist them if I do DC heaters. I don't know why. You don't have to, but I do. So that kind of stuff I do first. Next, I build the power supply. Because once I got that built, I can start to test other parts of the circuit. Then the third thing I do, including laying out the ground scheme as part of the power supply, then I go the input stage and the output stage. And rather than bounce back and forth and say, I'm going to put this resistor on the output, now I'm going to go work on the input a little while, I try to complete it like a module. Module, 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 module. Does that make sense? Maybe it's just my quirkiness. That's what I like to do. Okay, our plates are pins 2 and pin 6, so what we do is we just run a wire across there, and 2 and 6 are connected together, and that's the plate, so that goes down to our CCS. And then pin 3 and pin 7 are the grids. Obviously, we don't have to play these things. We'll do it about a minute. Pin 3 and pin 7 are the grids, and then pin 4 and pin 8 are the cathode's easy. We got one resistor. Goes to ground. So 1K or something like that. Now, the grid is where your input comes in. So we've got this RCA cable that comes down. We've got the ground part of it. Then we've got the center part of it. The center part, you're going to need a terminal to it. Center part comes here, connects into here, ground goes here, connects into here. I do that just to stabilize the wires and shift all over the place. You probably just other direction. Don't on these terminal strips, it's tempting to use on the little 5-pin terminal strips, it's tempting to use that center connector for ground. But there again, now you're grounding through the chassis instead of through a tie back to the ground bus. So don't use those. I just clip them off a lot of times, just get them out of the way. Remember, grounded, we're all going to tie back to this bus. Don't lose your turn. Okay. Oh, I remember we put a tandem resistor in there, didn't we? Got R2. That's where we actually have R2, just a little tank, audio note, piece. No, I think it's a 1K.
The two cathodes go through the cathode bias resistor, and that should be 1K.
Yeah.
R4.
There's a complete parts list as part of this, you know, the download off this.
You're not going to need to with the CCS because it lets the tube just run crazy wild. So, yeah, you're not going to need it, and you get a cap out of the circuit there too. Alrighty. Okay, so we got the input stage done, we got the power supply done, we're just about finished. The next thing is the our big old 45.
Put that here. Filament, thread, plate. First thing I do is I get a pencil or a pen on the backside of my tube socket, I label these things because those four pins, they're not labeled and it's really easy to get them confused. So what you don't want to do is put your grid signal in on the plate, and the plate signal in on the grid, and then plug it in and try to make it work. The filament on these things is comes from Humpot. So Humpot is just a small wire wound resistor, 100 ohms or so, it's fine, 50 ohms is good. But make it at least a 2 watt. You can find a 5 watt Humpot, that's even better. So these connections go here and here. This goes, we're doing that. So this goes into our phone. 2.5 volt phone. The other side of this is the shaft that sticks out through the chest plate. This now becomes the connection to the cathode resistor. So what we're looking at here is P1. So what we did was felt that the cathode resistor they specified seemed to be getting a little warm. So we put in a 50 watt part in yours.
Yeah, it got a little warm. It became double the voltage.
Yeah, we actually lost the cathode resistor base. So
we used 50 watt aluminum apples. That's really what it takes.
And you're talking about a very small phase difference.
Yeah, somebody would say to me, wow, that's a really expensive part. Well, it's $3.65.
Okay, so you get this big old 50 watt resistor in there, connects up like this, and then across it goes C5, which is another pretty big function part. It's just, we use the solid cap instead of an electrolytic cap. 47 microfarad, 250 volts.
Now, This is another tricky part about the layout is, as you're doing this, I'd suggest you get the chassis plate, which is what we did, and we started actually putting parts on it to see about how much physical space they're going to take. Because here, this cap doesn't look any bigger than any of the other caps on there. It's a big sucker. So you want to be sure that you have a lot of plenty of room for these pieces. Okay. The grid from this comes from the plate down here. Connected directly up, that's the direct couple part of this. And then the plate goes to two pieces, right? Goes to our output transformer and to the parafeed chuck. Physically, it's about that big, right? We have these two pieces. Transformer, parafeed, 2+. This is third big piece, which is C6, that grounding cap. The other side of the output transformer goes to the receiver terminals. We should have done this ahead of time, so I could have made it a little neater on there. Sorry, guys, it's not exactly the way the chassis looks underneath, but if you look at that picture Bill's passing around, it's not far off. One of the things we did, too, on the iron, we'll talk about real quickly, was we tried to make it so that nothing was, none of the laminations were completely parallel with any other piece of iron in there. We could do that because we've got three dimensions to work in. We've got the top plate, the bottom plate, we've got side walls. So if you look at them, everything is skewed a little bit from everything else. And we did that to make sure there weren't any hum fields that were coupling from one magnetic device to another. So,
none of them are.
Okay, got that in my sleeve. There you go.
There. Let's play some music.
Hopefully it's helpful to see the translation between schematic to more physical pieces, kind of talk a little bit about the layout, what makes sense. I know we're just about out of time. We should have planned this for 90 minutes. But yeah. No. What are the other? There are other part numbers for it, but it's not a. It's not in the 12.
12B, I think it's 12B H7. 12B something. It's like I bought it earlier.
12AB.
12AB, yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, 12AB something.
No, the wiring, the pinout's completely different than the 12AX or 12AU kind of device.
Right.
Well, yeah, I noticed that. Sometimes I like to
The tricky thing is going to be with the direct coupling again. You want to make sure that your plate ends up at 150 volts. So otherwise, it's not going to tie into the next stage correctly. So as long as you've got 150 volts on that plate, you're good to go on the other side.
I bought a lot of time.
This is a great circuit.
Really nice circuit.
The another tube that would go really nicely in there that I've used quite frequently is a Western Electric 417A. In that case, you've got one section instead of two, and it's three times the price because they're hard to find anymore. But really nice to Gordon Lankin uses them in a lot of his
driver.
Also prone to RF oscillations, so you use, in that case, you're definitely going to want to have this grid stop on there and things like that. Yeah, there's, what are they? Six? I can't remember. Yeah, 33 or something. I don't know. But yeah, there are a lot of Russian equivalents of those. For the 437 and the 417. What other questions? Put a choke in, you get variable reactance based on the frequency that's going that you're having at the time, right? So at very low frequencies, this guy is going to have much less AC impedance than it does at higher frequencies. So higher the frequency, the bigger the resistor essentially that becomes for AC, all of the DC component stays the same. So yeah, it introduces some issues of its own, but what you want to do is you want to try and make let's see, your pipe resistance is, so I'm thinking you're going to want this at the lowest frequency to at least be 2K, or more, yeah. Does that make sense? Anybody have any contrary opinions on that?
You maintain the operating point by putting your resistor above it and the sound
people from the original. In this case, we can't. There's no way you can put that 500 volts in, because then you'd have like 497.5 volts. So, yeah, what you're going to do is come off of your power supply. So that 4.7 we talked about with the CCS, this is going to have to be a big gap. So, let's see. Let's say our supply is 480. We want to end up at 150. So that's 330 volts. We drop a little bit if we drop the cost here. We know the DC resistance, we can figure it out, but let's say 20 volts is dropped. So we have about 310 volts across here. So we divide that by 10 milliamps, gives you a 31K resistor. Now the thing, the consideration here is that's going to be 31K at a bunch of watts. So
probably a 25 watt part at that point. We could figure that out as well.
Just multiply these together. 3 watts times 5 to give you 15 watts.
So 15 watt minimum, I'd say, on that guy, if you're going to use a flip chart.
The gains are very low.
Slightly.
The gains are
slightly.
Yeah,
I have. I've tried to plate chokes on several occasions, and I don't like them in the driver stage. I like CCSs, and I like resistors. I put a nice Mills 12 watt resistor in there and be happy all day long. Okay, well, thanks very much, guys. Bill, any party?
Thank you, Steve.